In a world where love is diagnosed as a disease, Lauren Oliver's Delirium has captivated millions with its haunting premise. This New York Times bestseller, the first in a trilogy that has sold over 3 million copies worldwide, presents a chilling alternative America where love, or amor deliria nervosa, is considered the deadliest of all diseases. The novel has developed a cult following, particularly among young adults seeking stories that explore the tension between emotional authenticity and societal control. Even celebrities like Emma Roberts have championed the book, with Roberts once attached to star in a television adaptation. Beyond its commercial success, the novel raises profound questions about the price of emotional safety in a world increasingly focused on eliminating risk and pain. In Portland, Maine, 64 years after love was declared a disease, 17-year-old Lena Halloway counts down the days until her procedure, the government-mandated cure administered on her 18th birthday. Unlike many who fear the operation, Lena can't wait to be free from love's dangerous influence. Her entire worldview has been shaped by the Book of Shush, the government safety handbook that details the symptoms and dangers of deliria. Lena's fear of love stems from personal tragedy. Her mother committed suicide when Lena was just 6 years old, unable to be cured of her love for Lena's father. This family history has marked Lena as potentially sympathetic to the disease, making her desperate to prove her commitment to the cure. Her older sister Rachel underwent the procedure 9 years earlier and now lives a peaceful, emotionless life with her husband, seemingly unable to even remember what love feels like. The society Lena inhabits operates on strict control and segregation. Boys and girls are kept separate until after their procedures. Marriages are arranged through evaluation scores, and citizens are constantly monitored for signs of infection. The government's motto, safety, sanctity, community, reinforces the belief that emotional detachment equals security. Regulators and police conduct random raids to catch sympathizers, and those who resist the cure are either executed or imprisoned in the crypts, Portland's notorious detention center. What makes this dystopian world particularly disturbing is how thoroughly its citizens have internalized its logic. Lena genuinely believes that the procedure will protect her from suffering her mother's fate. After the procedure, she thinks, I'll be paired with a boy and eventually married, safe and free from pain forever. The system has effectively weaponized her trauma, turning her fear of emotional pain into willing compliance with a regime that denies humanity's most fundamental connection. As Lena prepares for her evaluation, the process that will determine her future husband and social standing, we witness the dehumanizing mechanics of this supposedly perfect society. The evaluation reduces human beings to numerical scores, with matches made between people of similar ratings to avoid disparities in intelligence, temperament, and background. On evaluation day, Lena must stand nearly naked before four evaluators who scrutinize everything from her physical appearance to her personal preferences. The process is deliberately intimidating, designed to test compliance as much as compatibility. Lena has been carefully coached by her Aunt Carol to give generic, inoffensive answers. Blue or green is her favorite color, appropriately feminine hobbies, and no hint of independent thinking. This system of evaluation reveals the underlying social engineering at work. By matching people based on superficial compatibility rather than emotional connection, the government creates stable but passionless partnerships. The evaluation also reinforces social hierarchies. Lena's friend Hannah, from a wealthy family, is expected to score highly and move to the prestigious West End after her procedure, while Lena anticipates a modest apartment in Cumberland. The evaluation scene takes an unexpected turn when a protest disrupts the proceedings. A herd of cows burst into the laboratory, some wearing evaluation gowns with "Not Cure, Death" painted on their flanks. This first glimpse of resistance introduces the possibility that the system isn't as impenetrable as it seems. During the chaos, Lena notices a golden-haired boy watching from the observation deck, a momentary connection that will ultimately change everything. Despite her lifelong fear of Deliria, Lena's carefully constructed worldview begins to crack when she meets Alex, a young man who appears to be cured but harbors a dangerous secret. Their first meaningful encounter occurs at East End Beach, where Alex reveals he was never actually cured. The three-pronged scar behind his ear, the universal mark of the procedure, is a fake, carefully created with a knife. He is an invalid from the wilds, the unregulated territories beyond Portland's borders. This revelation terrifies Lena, who has been taught that invalids are barely human, deadly things that will rip you to shreds. Yet something about Alex challenges everything she's been taught. He is thoughtful, gentle, and alive in a way the cured people around her are not. When he confesses, "I like you, okay? That's it. That's all." The simplicity of his statement contrasts sharply with the complicated web of fear and regulation that has defined Lena's understanding of human connection. Their relationship develops in secret meetings at abandoned places, particularly an old house at 37 Brook Street that once belonged to sympathizers. In these hidden spaces, Lena discovers aspects of herself and her world that the system has tried to suppress. Alex introduces her to poetry and music, art forms heavily censored in their society. He challenges her to question the government's narrative about the wilds, describing communities of invalids who live difficult but free lives beyond the border. What makes their connection so powerful is how it transforms Lena's perception. Colors become more vivid, music more affecting, and even Portland's familiar streets take on new dimensions. "Love transforms everything around me," she realizes. The dump shimmers miraculously. Seagulls look painted against the sky. Rainstorms become falling shards of glass. This awakening of her senses represents a fundamental challenge to a system designed to dull human experience. As Lena falls deeper in love with Alex, she experiences firsthand the symptoms of deliria that the Book of Shin warns against: disorientation, difficulty focusing, elevated heart rate, and a preoccupation that borders on obsession. These physical manifestations frighten her at first. She constantly checks her pulse and breathing, washes her hands compulsively, and worries she's been infected. What's fascinating about Oliver's portrayal of love as disease is how it captures the genuine disorientation of falling in love. Anyone who has experienced intense romantic feelings will recognize the symptoms: the inability to concentrate, the physical reactions to the beloved's presence, the way the world seems simultaneously more vibrant and less important than the relationship. By pathologizing these universal experiences, the dystopian society has turned a fundamental human connection into something shameful and dangerous. Lena's internal conflict intensifies as she recognizes the disease taking hold. "The desire for Alex is so strong, it feels like a razor blade edging through my organs," she admits. "All I can think is, it will kill me, it will kill me, it will kill me, and I don't care." This willingness to risk everything for love represents a complete reversal of her earlier beliefs. Where once she feared ending up like her mother, destroyed by love, she now understands that a life without genuine connection might not be worth living at all. The progression of their relationship follows a beautiful, tentative path as they explore physical intimacy in a society where touch between uncured people is strictly forbidden. Their first kiss is described not as the quick, closed-mouth pecks Lena has observed at weddings, but as something like music or dancing, but better. These moments of connection become increasingly precious as Lena's procedure date approaches, creating a countdown that adds urgency to their romance. When Alex takes Lena across the border into the wilds, she discovers the government's most profound lie: the electric fence that supposedly protects Portland from the dangerous territories beyond isn't actually electrified at all. If they lied about the fence, about the invalids, about the raids being for our protection, she realizes, they might have lied about love being a disease too. The journey into the wilds represents both a physical and ideological crossing. As Alex guides her through the forest using hidden trail markers, Lena encounters the remnants of the Blitz, the government's campaign to destroy communities outside regulated cities. Cracked roads, bombed buildings, and abandoned vehicles stand as silent testimony to the violence used to enforce conformity. This physical evidence contradicts everything she's been taught about the government's benevolent protection. At Alex's trailer in a settlement called Crest Village Mobile Park, Lena discovers a different way of living. The community consists of makeshift homes, trailers, tents stretched between trees, and repurposed vehicles. Yet there's a vibrant humanity that contrasts with Portland's sterile order. Most significantly, Alex's home is filled with books, particularly poetry, that would be forbidden in the city. When he reads Shakespeare and Elizabeth Barrett Browning aloud, the words affect Lena like music, awakening emotions she's been taught to fear. This glimpse of an alternative society forces Lena to confront the possibility that security comes at too high a price. The invalids may lack Portland's material comforts and medical advances, but they retain their capacity for authentic connection. As Alex explains, many people in the wilds were once citizens who chose freedom over the procedure, including, as Lena will discover, her own mother. The novel's most devastating revelation comes when Alex takes Lena to the Crypts, Portland's notorious prison, and shows her cell 118, where her mother was held after her failed suicide attempt. For 12 years, Lena believed her mother had died, but the evidence in the cell tells a different story. The walls are covered entirely with a single four-letter word scratched repeatedly into every surface: love. And on the ground lies a silver chain with a ruby-encrusted dagger charm, her father's charm that her mother always wore. Most significantly, Lena discovers that one of the O's in love has been carved so deeply that it created a tunnel through which her mother escaped to the wilds. This physical manifestation of her mother's resistance, literally carving her way to freedom through the word love, transforms Lena's understanding of her family history. What she had interpreted as abandonment was actually an act of desperate courage. This discovery forces Lena to confront the lies that have shaped her life. Her Aunt Carol, Uncle William, and even her sister Rachel allowed her to believe her mother was dead rather than admit the truth, that she had escaped the system they were committed to upholding. The government's control extends beyond physical imprisonment to the manipulation of memory and narrative. By erasing her mother's resistance from the official story, they attempted to erase the possibility of resistance itself. The revelation that her mother is alive somewhere in the wilds triggers a complex emotional response in Lena. She's simultaneously overjoyed that her mother survived, angry at being deceived, and hurt that her mother never returned for her. When she demands to know why, Alex reminds her of the brutal truth. You know what would have happened if she was caught again, if she was caught with you. It would have meant death for both of you. This understanding leads Lena to a profound realization about the nature of love itself. Loving people means giving things up, sometimes even giving them up. Her mother's name for her, Magdalena, after Mary Magdalene, who was abandoned by Joseph so she could be saved, takes on new significance. Love sometimes requires sacrifice rather than possession. As Lena and Alex plan their escape to the wilds, the fragility of their rebellion becomes increasingly apparent. The system they're fighting has vast resources and ruthless methods for maintaining control. Raids intensify throughout Portland, with regulators and police conducting violent sweeps to catch sympathizers and invalids. During one such raid at a party in Deering Highlands, Lena witnesses the brutal reality of the government's enforcement. Dogs attack fleeing partygoers, regulators swing heavy batons, and people transform into desperate animals willing to hurt each other to escape. We're animals, Lena thinks, as she watches a boy slam a girl against a wall to get past her. We're animals. This dehumanization, ironically occurring as people fight to preserve their humanity, reveals the psychological damage inflicted by a system that turns citizens against each other. The raid scene also demonstrates how quickly social bonds disintegrate under pressure. People who were laughing together minutes earlier become competitors in a desperate struggle for survival. This breakdown of solidarity serves the government's interests by preventing the formation of meaningful resistance. by keeping people isolated and afraid, the system maintains its power even when its ideology is questioned. Lena's friendship with Hannah, once the center of her social world, becomes another casualty of their diverging paths. Though Hannah initially seems more rebellious than Lena, attending illegal parties and accessing forbidden music, she ultimately chooses safety over freedom. When Lena invites her to escape to the wilds, Hannah declines with a sad smile, admitting, "You're braver than I am." This painful separation illustrates how the system divides even those with genuine connections, making collective resistance nearly impossible. The novel reaches its climax when Lena's family discovers her relationship with Alex and schedules an emergency procedure. Tied to her bed and heavily sedated, Lena faces the imminent loss of everything that has come to matter to her. In this moment of crisis, unexpected allies emerge: her silent sister Gracie, who speaks for the first time to create a diversion, and Hannah, who manages to get a message to Alex despite being under surveillance herself. The novel's heartbreaking conclusion demonstrates both the power and the cost of choosing love in a world designed to eliminate it. When Alex arrives on his motorcycle to rescue Lena, their escape becomes a desperate chase through Portland's streets. Helicopters, police cars, and regulators pursue them as they race toward the border, their flight illuminated by searchlights that cut through the darkness like accusatory fingers. As they approach the fence, Alex makes the ultimate sacrifice. Knowing they can't both escape, he creates a diversion to give Lena time to climb over during the brief window when the electricity will be disabled. Despite his promise to follow, Lena looks back to see Alex surrounded by guards and soldiers, his shirt soaked with blood. In their final moment of connection, he mouths a single word: run. This sacrifice embodies the novel's central paradox, that love, the very thing declared a disease, becomes the source of extraordinary courage and selflessness. Alex chooses Lena's freedom over his own survival, demonstrating that genuine connection leads not to weakness, but to profound strength. His action directly contradicts the government's narrative that love makes people selfish and irrational. As Lena flees into the wilds, she carries with her not just the memory of Alex, but a transformed understanding of herself and her world. "I'm no one special," she reflects, "just a single girl, in between in every way. But I have a secret. You can build walls to the sky, and I'll find a way to fly above them." This newfound resilience represents the ultimate failure of the system designed to keep her compliant and afraid. The novel ends with Lena's declaration of defiance. "There are many of us who refuse to stop believing, who love in a world without walls, who love into hate, against hope, and without fear." This statement functions as both a personal affirmation and a revolutionary manifesto. By choosing to love despite everything she's been taught, Lena joins a tradition of resistance that extends beyond her individual story. At its core, Delirium asks a profound question: what remains of humanity when we eliminate its most fundamental emotion? The dystopian society Lauren Oliver creates has achieved perfect stability by removing love's unpredictability. Citizens live orderly, predictable lives free from heartbreak's devastation. Yet this security comes at an enormous cost: the loss of joy, beauty, and meaningful connection. The novel's genius lies in how it makes us question whether safety is worth such sacrifice. Through Lena's awakening, we experience both the terrifying vulnerability and the exhilarating aliveness that love brings. Her description of colors becoming more vibrant, music more affecting, and even ordinary objects taking on new significance reminds us how emotion enriches perception. Without love, Portland citizens move through a muted, diminished version of reality. The government's pathologizing of love represents an extreme version of how societies often treat emotion as dangerous and irrational. By classifying love as a disease with scientific-sounding terminology, amor deliria nervosa, the authorities transform a universal human experience into something that requires medical intervention. This medicalization of emotion reflects real-world tendencies to treat normal human feelings as disorders requiring correction. What makes Delirium particularly relevant is how it explores the relationship between emotional vulnerability and control. The society's emphasis on safety above all else, safety, sanctity, community, resonates with contemporary concerns about risk management and security. By showing how this obsession with safety leads to profound unfreedom, Oliver challenges readers to consider what protections are worth sacrificing essential aspects of our humanity. The novel also offers a powerful meditation on memory and its relationship to identity. After the procedure, citizens retain their memories but lose their emotional connection to them. Rachel can presumably remember her relationship with Thomas but feels nothing about it. The experiences are reduced to meaningless data. This severing of emotional connection effectively creates a different person, raising questions about what constitutes the self. If we lose our capacity to feel about our past, have we lost something essential about who we are? In the end, Delirium affirms that the capacity for love, with all its messiness, pain, and unpredictability, is what makes us fully human. When Lena crosses the border into the wilds, she chooses a life of greater hardship, but also greater authenticity. The novel doesn't romanticize this choice. The wilds are genuinely dangerous, and Lena's future remains uncertain. Yet her decision represents a profound assertion of what matters most: the freedom to feel, connect, and determine one's own emotional life. As Lena runs into the unknown territory beyond Portland's walls, she carries with her a truth the government tried desperately to suppress: that walls, no matter how high, cannot contain the human spirit's capacity for connection. Her final words, "I love you, remember," they cannot take it, stand as both a personal declaration and a universal affirmation of love's enduring power against all attempts to regulate, pathologize, or eliminate it. The novel concludes with Lena's transformation from a fearful rule follower to a determined rebel. This evolution isn't just personal. It connects her to a lineage of resistance that includes her mother, Alex, and countless unnamed others who refuse to surrender their capacity for love. "There are many of us," she declares, suggesting a community that exists beyond Portland's controlled environment. This community represents an alternative vision of human connection, one based not on regulated safety, but on authentic choice. The invalids in the wilds may lack Portland's material comforts, but they retain something more valuable: the freedom to determine their own emotional lives. Their existence challenges the government's insistence that the cure represents the only path to happiness and stability. What makes this resistance particularly powerful is how it operates through memory and storytelling. By controlling the narrative about love, classifying it as a disease, and erasing evidence of resistance, the government attempts to eliminate even the possibility of alternative ways of living. Lena's discovery of her mother's escape through the crypts represents the recovery of a suppressed history, one that offers a template for her own rebellion. The novel's final message emphasizes the resilience of human connection against systematic attempts to destroy it. Despite decades of propaganda, surveillance, and brutal enforcement, love continues to emerge, like water finding cracks in concrete or plants growing through abandoned buildings. This persistence suggests that the capacity for deep emotional connection isn't just a cultural construct, but something intrinsic to human nature that cannot be permanently eradicated. As Lena disappears into the wilds, her story remains unfinished. We don't know what hardships await her or whether she'll ever reunite with Alex. Yet her crossing represents a profound victory, not just an escape from control, but an affirmation of what makes life meaningful. In choosing love over safety, vulnerability over protection, and uncertainty over predictability, she reclaims her full humanity in all its messy, beautiful complexity. Delirium ultimately leaves us with a challenge: to examine the walls in our own lives, the boundaries between safety and freedom, between comfort and authenticity. Through Lena's journey, we're invited to consider what aspects of ourselves we might be sacrificing in pursuit of security, and whether some risks are worth taking for the chance to live more fully. In a world increasingly concerned with eliminating discomfort and uncertainty, this reminder of love's necessary vulnerability feels both subversive and essential.